Welcome to Smash Pieces, a casual walk through the history of the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate roster. My name is Joe.
And my name is Matt.
And if you're new here, what we are doing on the show is we are playing one game for every character in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, from 1984's Duck Hunt to 2019's Fire Emblem Three Houses. And today's game, it's representing fighter number 31, is the 1998 PlayStation 1 game, Metal Gear Solid.
So just like set yourself back in 2005, the first announcement that Solid Snake was going to be in Super Smash Bros. Brawl.
I think, even to this day, with all the crazy shit we've gotten, I think Snake is still the craziest shit of all. He does not fit in this game. He does not seem like a character that should be in Super Smash Bros. And yet here he is, and I love him.
I think we're also at the point, though, where the less someone fits, the more they fit. Like, that's kind of the point of Smash Brothers now.
Kind of, but I mean, like, think of it this way. Joker sort of fits because, like, I mean, anime.
Yeah, if Persona was on a Nintendo system, Joker, a Persona character would have been in Smash 10 years ago.
Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy 100% fit because they're two of the biggest RPG franchises in the world. You got King of Fighters, which specifically, like, inspired a large portion of Smash. You have Banjo and Kazooie, who were big, big parts of the N64's life cycle. And then you have Solid Snake.
Hey, you forgot Sonic the Hedgehog.
I mean, Sonic the Hedgehog is one of the biggest, like, rival mascots Nintendo ever had.
And in fairness, we didn't talk about this when we talked about Sonic 2, but, like, in 2007, it was actually kind of unbelievable that Sonic was in Smash Brothers.
Oh, 100%.
Because that was the same year, I think, that the first Mario and Sonic at the Olympics happened, which was the first Mario and Sonic crossover ever.
Yeah, pretty much. That predated Mario and Sonic. Well, no, I think Mario and Sonic at the Olympics was announced before Sonic was announced in Smash, wasn't it?
Yes, Mario and Sonic at the Olympics was first. And it's funny, by the time Mega Man made it into the game, he was kind of old hat. Like, oh yeah, of course Mega Man's in.
Yeah, Mega Man made perfect sense. Like, Ryu made perfect sense. Bayonetta mostly made perfect sense. But Snake, you look at Snake, and it's just like this military man from this game about nuclear disarmament.
Which was only ever on a Nintendo system by a fluke.
Yeah, it was. At that time, there had been only one Metal Gear game on a Nintendo system.
There had been two.
Two, that's right.
But one of them is not actually counted as a Metal Gear game.
This is true. Now there are three. Because Snake Eater was on 3DS. Did you remember the Snake Eater was on 3DS? Most people don't.
I think about that every day.
I still can't believe that's a thing. But yeah, like, Snake does not seem like the kind of character, like, that would be in Super Smash Bros. In any way, shape, or form. And it's also, like, really weird how he did end up in Smash. I believe the story is that, I can't remember the full, like, story off the top of my head, but it was something to do with Hideo Kojima and Masahiro Sakurai are friends. They're most of the big developers over in Japan that you know of, they have connections to each other. The games industry is a big web of connections. Everybody knows each other. And I guess, was it like his kids or something? In my head, it seems
Kojima's
illegal.
Son.
Yeah, in my head, it seems illegal that Kojima has children. but yeah, it was Kojima's son, and he loved Super Smash Brothers, and he asked Kojima, like, hey, are any of your characters ever going to be in Smash? And so he went to Sakurai and was like, can you please put Snake in Melee? But Melee was too far in development at that point for them to do that. So Snake, when Brawl started development, Snake was on the shortlist and ended up in the game. And I can't think of any other character where that is the case, where somebody went to Sakurai and said, hey, can you put this in the game? If there is one, we haven't heard about it.
Yeah. So There's so much history tied up in Metal Gear Solid. Obviously, it's not the first game that we have played to have voice acting, but is the first one to have so much voice acting.
And even, like, this was one of the first games to have so much voice acting in general, not even just on our on our list. Like
Star Fox 64 had, like, what, 500 lines of dialogue total?
Yeah, and that's...
Metal Gear Solid has thousands.
That's like 20 minutes of Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal. Like, this game became, this game and Metal Gear in general, like, nowadays when people think, like, cinematic games, games that are more like movies than they are games, people think, like, Uncharted and stuff like that. But Metal Gear was the original. Like, Metal Gear was the one at first. It was a big deal in that way. And it was also just like, so 1998, we're only playing two games from 98, which is really bizarre to say because 98 is considered one of the best years in video game history. It's that, and I think 2011 is also up there. There's one other year earlier in the 2000s, I believe, that is also in that list. But, like, not only did Metal Gear Solid come out that year, Ocarina of Time, which is our next game, came out that year, Tekken 3, Half-Life, Grim Fandango, Resident Evil 2... Banjo-Kazooie, Crash Bandicoot 3, Xenogears, just a bunch of really, really big stuff came out in 98, and 98 is just considered one of the better years that we have ever had in video games.
I mean, well, in fairness, how many of those could we talk about?
F-Zero X.
I suppose...
It came out in 98, I guess. I didn't know that came out in 98, but it did.
Does anyone really talk about F-Zero X?
I like F-Zero X. At least I liked it. I think I own a cartridge.
I'm sure it's fine. I just have... I don't think I've ever played F-Zero X.
But yeah, 1998 was a crazy year for video games. We technically would have been talking about a 98 video game if we were talking about Banjo-Kazooie, but we're not.
Well, we already did then.
Exactly. But yeah, so 98, big year for video games. Metal Gear Solid comes out in that year. It's pretty cool. People like it a lot. And it spawned the series, which we have been asked to talk about our thoughts about the series as a whole, but I think we will wait until closer to the end before we do that, because we should actually start to talk about the game itself. Now, this is a weird one, because for the first, and I'm pretty sure the only time this will ever happen, one of us played the original, and the other played a remake.
That's, we're doing that with literally our very next game.
But the difference there is that that game made an effort to keep as much exactly the same as humanly possible, so you essentially are still playing the same game.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you played the original Metal Gear Solid PlayStation 1. I played the 2004 GameCube remake by Silicon Knights, Metal Gear Solid The Twin Snakes.
Which, I believe Shigeru Miyamoto partially was involved in the development in some way?
He was, apparently. He was, so, Twin Snakes was developed basically with Hideo Kojima and Shigeru Miyamoto working together to, like, guide the team. I imagine Miyamoto was pretty much only on, like, here's how to get this working on the GameCube. Because I doubt he had, like, any other... This seems like the kind of game that Miyamoto would be like, I'm not into that, there's guns.
Yeah, well, it's, you're not really supposed to kill everyone.
Yeah, but still, like, the existence of guns in the game, from what I know about Miyamoto, that is excessively not his thing at all. Like, he just does not jive with the idea of violence like that.
Well, yeah, violence isn't real.
Pretty much. But Silicon Knights, of course, before this, had made Eternal Darkness for the GameCube, which is considered a classic GameCube title that cannot be played basically anywhere anymore because it was never re-released on anything, even though Nintendo owns the IP, I'm pretty sure.
There's Eternal Darkness Spirits in Smash.
Yeah, like they own the IP, they've just never done anything with it. And that, so like in 2002, they made that, they made Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes in 2004, 2008, they made Two Human, which is an infamously bad game. And in 2011, they made X-Men Destiny, which is a shovelware title that is also not good. And, they no longer make video games. They shut down in 2014.
Isn't there like also some big controversy with the guy that was in charge? What was it? Was it Dennis Dyack?
Dennis Dyack, I'm not super familiar with him, but yeah, he is in charge of Silicon Knights, but Twin Snakes specifically. So Twin Snakes was, yes, it was made guidance of Kojima and Miyamoto. It like brought all of the voice actors back, which apparently was not their original plan.
No, in fact, David Hayter personally took a pay cut to ensure that it happened.
Yeah, he convinced Konami that that is definitely what they should have done, and they did it, because they couldn't just reuse the lines, because the original lines in Metal Gear Solid were recorded in a non-soundproof studio, but it didn't matter on the PlayStation, because the audio compression was so, like, the amount of audio compression on PlayStation 1 voice lines was so large that you can't hear it anyway, it doesn't matter. But the GameCube has a lot better sound quality, so you can hear all of the like background sound and everything on the line reads. So they had to go and re-record every line in the game.
Funny how that works out.
Which again, like you said, is a fucking shit ton of lines.
Oh yeah, and almost the entire voice cast came back. I believe like one actor didn't come back.
The entire voice cast came back, but Gray Fox, who was in the original game voiced by the person that voiced by Greg Eagles, who also voiced the DARPA chief Donald Anderson, who does come back to voice Donald Anderson, Gray Fox was recast as Rob Paulsen, who is a well-known voice actor in cartoons. I believe he is Yakko Warner is his most popular. Yakko Warner and Pinky from Pinky and the Brain are his most famous stuff.
And that is the voice actor that ended up for the assist trophy in Smash Brothers.
That is the voice actor that is now like the thing. Twin Snakes lines are what were reused in MGS4 when you go back to Shadow Moses Island and like hear memories and shit. Those are the line reads that they use. They use the Twin Snake probably for the same exact thing of like, well, we can't use the original. There's background noise.
Yes, but the overall graphics of that section are based off of the PS1 version.
Yes.
Overall, I believe it is the PS1 version is canon, but like you said, by necessity, they have to use the Twin Snakes voice clips.
Yeah, MGS1, I believe, is canon, though that's weird to say, because there's not, story-wise, there isn't really any changes in Twin Snakes. It's all the same, like all exactly the same.
Except, for the most part, there are a couple of minor differences. And anytime they visually flash back, they use footage of the original.
Correct. And in fact, you can get like a little mask of the original snake face in MGS4, and it's the PS1 face specifically.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the nostalgia. The differences are largely nothing that would matter in future versions, except for the accents that got changed on Naomi and Mei Ling. And did they change Nastasha?
The Wikipedia article says they do, but I remember Nastasha having a Russian accent. But also, I called Nastasha maybe 2 times in the entire game and forget she is in the game every time I replay.
I'm looking it up right now.
We should probably explain literally anything about Metal Gear Solid real quick. Metal Gear Solid is technically the third game in the Metal Gear series, as far as I'm aware.
I'm looking at footage right now. They did, in fact, get rid of Nastasha's accent.
That's weird. Why do I remember her having a Russian accent?
Which I would say, well, her cadence of voice is very, I'm speaking in a Russian accent, but she doesn't have a Russian accent.
That's weird. That's the one that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Her name is Nastasha Romanenko.
Well, Mei Ling's the only one that really made sense for them to change the accent, I think.
Yeah, I am fine either way with Naomi. It's still Jennifer Hale either way, so like you win both ways. But Mei Ling, yeah, it actually doesn't make sense that Mei Ling has a Chinese accent in the original game. She was raised in America. She's a member of the American military.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, like, Nastasha is Russian. She grew up in Russia. Naomi's American nationality is fake. She grew up in a British colony. Mei Ling is American, who grew up in America.
So what?
She just happens to be Asian in race.
Yeah, so that's the one that's like, no, that's... I'm fine with you changing that completely. That's... yeah.
And also is not a Chinese actress.
Oh, it is a Chinese actress. It's just she's a Vietnamese
actress.
Oh, Vietnamese, yeah. But she's also American. Like, she's Vietnamese American.
Yes. Well, they didn't have a white girl doing the voice.
Yeah.
Which, thank God for that.
Yeah, that's a point in its favor. We still have problems with that today.
Yes. But the voice actress was not ethnically Chinese.
But yeah, so Metal Gear Solid, for anybody that does not know, is technically the third game in the Metal Gear series, but nobody's played Metal Gear or Metal Gear Solid Snake. Nobody in the world, and if they tell you they have, they're lying to you. As far as most people are aware, Metal Gear Solid starts at Metal Gear Solid.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Metal Gear and Metal Gear Solid Snake are canon, they are explicitly canon. They are referenced in this game.
Well, Gray Fox is from Metal Gear 2.
Yeah, Gray Fox is from Metal Gear 2. It already expects you to know. It already expects you to know who Big Boss was.
I mean, the tension between Campbell and Snake, where they don't trust each other, is because of their past missions together, which are in the Metal Gear games.
It's really weird, and I can't think of a single other franchise like this where it's just like, well, I mean, as far as most people are aware, it started with this game, but this is the third game, and it's bizarre. But hey, it is a stealth game, a 3D stealth game directed by Hideo Kojima.
Kojima game.
It is his most successful. It was his most successful game like ever up to that point. Because before this, he had done the Metal Gears and he had done Snatcher and Police Knots, I think, were his big claims to fame. But none of those really like hit the success threshold that Metal Gear Solid put Hideo Kojima on the map. Like,
when was Zone of the Enders?
Zone of the Enders is a PS2 game.
Okay.
So that would have been well after this. But yeah, it's the series so successful that Kojima got trapped in the Metal Gear prison for years. Never allowed to make anything else. Except for the one time they let him out to make 2 Zone of the Enders and then put him back in the Metal Gear prison.
Yeah, so Metal Gear Solid 2 was supposed to be the end of the series.
And then Metal Gear Solid 3 was supposed to be the end of the series.
Well, so Metal Gear Solid 3 explicitly was not a continuation of 2.
Yeah.
If Metal Gear Solid 4 never existed, you could call 3 a side story.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't super against making 3 because, let's be honest, he just really likes spy thrillers. So he got to make a spy thriller, like just a straight up 60s spy thriller. So he was like, yeah, I'll do that.
It's the best game he's ever made. Not the best thing. As much as I like MGS3 the best, it's hard to argue that 2 is not the best thing he's ever produced.
Yeah. And I also agree with that.
But 3 is still my favorite game.
2 is my favorite, but I agree. Like, 3 is a better game. And then he was under so much pressure that to wrap up questions that were never meant to be wrapped up, that he made 4.
Yep.
And 4 is a convoluted disaster.
4 is a mess. It is a great game. 4 is a mess. And then 5
is worse.
5 can't contradict anything because that would require something to happen in Metal Gear Solid 5.
5 wrapped up a 30-year plot hole that no one cared about.
Pretty much.
And then somewhere in there, they made Twin Snakes. That was after 2.
Yeah, that would have come out in 2004, 2005. 2004.
Yeah. And I'll get this out of the way. I'm with the masses on this one. I think Twin Snakes is largely inferior. I think that the importing the gameplay from 2 directly really messes with the metal, with the level design. Although I understand, like, you generally like your games a little easier. It makes the game easier. So I could see how to you that would be a benefit.
Well, this is also the only version. That's the first version I played because I didn't have a PlayStation. Well, yeah. I didn't have a PS1. I didn't have a GameCube either, to be fair. I didn't play Metal Gear Solid for the first time until like 2000 and...
I mean, I played it for the first time in 2015.
2011. It would have been 2011 on my end. I played all 4 of what were at that time the 4 Metal Gear games. In 2011, which was well after Snake was in Brawl, because that is the only reason that at that point I knew what Metal Gear Solid was, is because Snake was in Brawl. That's it.
And I think the voice acting is better in the original, though that's a matter of taste.
I think it comes down to the voice acting in the original is very PlayStation era-y, and it has charm to it. And granted, compared to a lot of the other shit on the PlayStation that had a lot of voice acting back then, cough, cough, Silent Hill, and Resident Evil, holy shit, it should not be as good as it is. Have you ever heard voice acting from either of those games?
Yes.
It is beautiful.
I've heard of Jill, the master of unlocking.
Resident Evil's so bad. And like that was mainly because those two games, both of them, back in that era, it was apparently very common for when they were recording the English voice lines, they would be directed by the Japanese voice director, who in many cases did not speak English. And so they were going largely by tone, like voice tone, of like, oh, it should sound like this. And nobody had the, like, you didn't really have the authority to tell them, yeah, but that sounds stupid. If you say it that way in English, it sounds really stupid.
I think Twin Snakes was voice directed by a native Japanese speaker.
I believe so, but it was like, it was after that era had ended, and so was the original Metal Gear Solid. I did learn, though, the other criticism that is lobbed at Twin Snakes very often, and I sort of think it's overblown how bad it is, but I do agree that it's a bit much, is that the cutscenes are a lot more like action movie-y.
Yeah, you actually said something like specific that really bothered me with regards to this, where you said like people have a problem that it's crazy, and that's what Metal Gear Solid is. It gets crazier from here. And I think that misrepresents the way in which Metal Gear is crazy. Metal Gear gets high concept insane. Like you've got a guy that shoots bees out of a Tommy gun. You've got an undead ghost that drags you through the River Styx. You've got a literal vampire. You've like stuff like that is insane to just describe. But the stuff in Twin Snakes is just visually crazy. It's just the visuals of the camera work and the action are over the top. And that's something that I don't really think fits with the rest of the game, because the rest of the game was relatively grounded. It was still a little weird. You still had Psycho Mantis, you still had Decoy Octopus, but it's by far the most grounded of the games. And they made it visually crazy without making it conceptually crazy to match. So I just think that it ends up being a tonal mess.
So something I learned about that, though, is that originally the cutscene director just had them do this, the cinematics like identical to the original game. And then Kojima saw them and said, no, I want them to be more action-y. So it is entirely Kojima's fault.
As many things are. He also made the story for Phantom Pain.
He is. Kojima is the weirdest creator in video games in that he, it seems to be a full 50-50 split. Everything he makes is either genius or the stupidest, worst idea he's ever had. And there is no in between.
He's very good at writing political drama, emotional character beats, stuff like that. He's very bad at writing women especially.
Yeah, Meryl is
genetics.
Meryl is very. He has written three good female characters ever in his entire life, I think.
So one of them is obviously the boss from Snake Eater.
One of them is the boss. I think Eva is also very well written, because she somehow, against all odds, uses all of his. She is actually a character that has all the flaws of a Kojima-written woman, but has an actual narrative justification for why she acts like that.
Yeah.
So in that way, I think Eva is very good, and I think Paz is all right. That ends the list of female characters that Kojima has written well.
And if you say otherwise, then you might be ashamed of your words and deeds.
And actually, in this game, granted, this does not hold up when she comes back in MGS4, Naomi Hunter is all right.
Yeah.
She's all right in this game. Mei Ling's pretty all right once you take away the problematic accent.
Mei Ling doesn't do anything, let's be honest.
Yeah, but I still like Mei Ling. She was nice to me.
Naomi, I actually really did like what they did with her, and like her arc with Grey Fox was also like genuinely emotional.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Hale kills it in both versions, delivery wise.
Yeah,
Jennifer Hale is one of the most talented voice actors in the biz, even today. So, like,
but yeah, Meryl ain't great.
Meryl is a bad character, and I'll say that happily. And you pointed out on your stream the fact that we're supposed to expect that Snake and Meryl are madly in love, and they have spent a total of maybe 20 minutes with each other throughout the entire night.
Mm-hmm.
It's really stupid.
Yeah. I have not played MGS4 yet, so maybe she is better in that.
She's not.
But based
I'm gonna rip that band-aid off for you right there. She's not.
Based on MGS1, she's pretty bad.
There are some bad like design decisions, which we can get into in a minute. I still want to talk about like story-wise and like setting-wise, Shadow Moses Island is the coolest setting that Metal Gear ever had. Ever. In general.
I mean, the jungles of the Soviet Union aren't bad.
They are a close second, being not real. But Shadow Moses Island is just this neat building, like this neat facility, and it genuinely feels like you are making your way through this very high security facility the entire time. It feels very isolated and lonely. And of course, Big Shell in MGS2 purposely tries to recreate that feeling.
Yeah, I like Big Shell a lot. Doesn't do as good
a job.
I like Big Shell a lot, but like the entire point of that game's story kind of makes it difficult to give Big Shell credit for its design.
Yeah, but like he's like Shadow Moses is just a super cool place to be, which is really kind of impressive considering a lot of it looks exactly the same, which. Of course it looks exactly the same. It's a fucking military base. Why would all the areas look like super different?
But it's also still designed well enough that you always know where you are.
Yeah, it's super fun to explore. It's
aesthetically it's very much the same throughout the whole base, but the layout is memorable enough in every area that you always know where you are.
Yeah. And it's and to be fair, it also helps that for the most part, Shadow Moses is very linear.
Completely linear.
Like it's a, like especially in the second half of the game, it's literally a straight line.
Yeah.
There are no branching paths in the second half of the game whatsoever. And also just Foxhound, I think, is the coolest enemy squad that the series has ever had.
Yeah, they every game since has just been an attempt to recapture the magic of Foxhound.
And I to varying degrees of success, like Sons of Liberty obviously are discount Foxhound, and they're supposed to be discount Foxhound. That's the point. And like the Cobras, I love, but you could cut them out of the game and the story would basically not change.
Yeah. And also there is a big dud in the Cobras with the Fury.
That is also true. And then there's also,
although in fairness, there is a big dud in Foxhound with Decoy Octopus.
That's true. The B&B Corps basically only exists because they said, shit, we don't have any boss characters. They are, like I said, the Cobras could be cut out of their game and the game would lose nothing. The B&B Corps could be cut out of MGS4 and the story of that game would literally not change a thing. They literally exist because they needed bosses.
Yeah.
So there's that. But yeah, I think Foxhound in general, just like Sniper Wolf is super cool. I actually, though, I think the end is like the one part of the Cobras that are like their sniper is better than Wolf, but not by much. I like the end a lot, but only in the way that he was implemented.
I think in story, the end is kind of boring, but in gameplay, like, holy shit, that fight.
Yeah, but Wolf as a character is far superior. And I love Wolf. Like, her death scene is my favorite scene in the game. It's the best scene in the game in general. Vulcan Raven is cool, even though in Twin Snakes, fighting him sucks a lot. And then I watched you fight him in the original game, and it looks like it probably worked way better.
Yeah, I actually liked that fight.
In MGS, in Twin Snakes, it sucks a lot because the Nikita is first person, which makes that like electrified floor area, the other area where you have to use the Nikita, it makes that actually a lot easier and a lot more, I think, easier to like maneuver through personally. But then you go into Vulcan Raven where it actively wants you to use the Nikita because it gives you a bunch of Nikita rounds before you walk in that room. And you can't keep track of where he is because it's all in first person, and that boss fight is basically Pac-Man, but the ghosts have fucking minigun. And if you come close to him, even if he's behind, like even if it's behind him, more often than not, he will immediately see it. And the instant the whing plays, he's already shot it down. That boss sucks in Twin Snakes. It is the worst boss in the game.
I mean, that's kind of part of the problem that I was mentioning where they ported over the gameplay engine from MGS2 without really thinking through the consequences of the rest of the game design.
I think that's the only part where I really, really believe that was, and I understand the whole thing of like, it also makes rooms easier, that, like you said, that's not really something that affects me personally, because I'm fine with the game being easier, but like, I can see why other people would have issues with that. But that is the one place where I was like, oh, this is demonstrably a worse boss fight because of this change.
Mm-hmm.
Which sucks because Vulcan Raven is really cool. He's a really cool character. He is criminally underused.
Yeah, he's like barely in the game.
He shows up for his two boss fights and that's literally it. That's all you ever see him do. But those two boss fights are enough for him to be super cool.
In fairness, that's roughly as much as Psycho Mantis does, but Psycho Mantis is also one of the most memorable parts of the entire game.
Psycho Mantis is one of the most unique boss fights that the series has ever had. Simply because it's the beginning of Kojima being like, because every game has at least one thing like this. I don't remember what 2's is, But every game has a thing where it's just like it messes with it. It uses your system. Like you have to do something to something outside of the game for this to happen. And why don't you explain the Mantis fight? Because I have talked a lot.
Well, so the Psycho Mantis fight, when it begins, like he starts taunting you with things on your save data. He taunts you about your general play style, which for me was very reckless, because I got caught a lot.
Same.
He taunts how often you save. If you save a lot, he says you're overly cautious. If you save very little, like I did, he says, you know, you're very reckless. And then he reads other save data on your system, which, for the original is other Konami games like Castlevania. And
which
for
is why
Twin Snakes,
his most famous line is, "You like Castlevania, don't you?"
Mm-hmm. And for Twin Snakes, it is Nintendo games and Silicon Knights games. Did you enjoy playing Eternal Darkness?
For me, he called out Super Smash Bros. Melee because I was using Ben's memory card. So he can also call out Zelda if you have Wind Waker, I believe.
And then he says, which this is the dumbest thing in the world, but I love it. I love it so much that when I failed to capture it on camera, I actually, like, I reset my console and went through the entire thing again just to make sure we got it. He tells you, put the controller on the floor, and I will move it with the power of my mind alone. And then it starts rumbling so that it just vibrates across the floor.
Yep. My controller did not have rumble, so I did not get to experience that. But I have experienced it in the past. It's super dumb, and I love it. Psycho Mantis is really stupid, but the main thing about him is that he's a psychic. He reads your mind. And how does he read your mind, Matt?
He literally reads your controller inputs. So the solution to the boss fight is to plug your controller into port 2.
Yeah.
So that he can't read your mind anymore.
And one thing they did change in Twin Snakes is you only have to unplug and replug in your controller one time on the PS1 version, I guess, from what I was told.
Yes.
On GameCube, you got to do it 3 times because there's 4 controller slots.
That kind of sucks. And also, like, when the fight starts, like, the screen goes black and, like, green letters that say Hideo show up, which is very similar to old CRTs at the time, which when they received no input, they just said video. In the same font, the same colors, the same everything.
I wonder how much of that had to do with, was like a determining factor for picking Silicon Knights. Because that's something that Eternal Darkness does. That's one of the things that Eternal Darkness is famous for, is the sanity effects, of which that's one of them.
Yeah, Eternal Darkness did it so hard that Nintendo sat down Dennis Dyack and was like, "All right, look, I don't know if we could let you do this," because one of the sanity effects was you load your save file and it says your save was corrupted.
I do remember hearing about that.
So like that was when they sat him down in the lunchroom and said, look, Dennis, come on.
This is really cool, but you can't, we don't have the support phones to deal with this.
But eventually, I don't remember. Like, I remember he did an interview. Actually, I think it was on Radio Free Nintendo, one of our podcasts on Nintendo World Report. He did an interview where he explained the story, and I don't remember how he convinced them. But I think, like, Miyamoto himself sat down with him at a lunchroom and was like, "Dennis, come on."
I mean, I guess that would make sense. I don't know. I've never played Eternal Darkness. I would very much like to, hint, hint, Nintendo. But it's, like I said, it is impossible to get a hold of nowadays and is, I believe, pretty hard to emulate. I don't think Dolphin runs Eternal Darkness very well, last I heard.
I've never tried.
I've also never tried. But
Psycho Mantis is so memorable that he's the only notable thing about the B&B core in MGS4 because they redo the Psycho Mantis stuff when you fight Screaming Mantis.
Yeah. It's a really, really cool boss fight. It's the most famous part of Metal Gear Solid, like, by far. Liquid Snake is fun. pretty much entirely because Cam Clark is the goofiest actor that has ever touched video games.
Cam Clark is incredible.
He's it's weird. So
the first Cam Clark role I ever witnessed was his role in Tales of Symphonia as Kratos. It's a very serious role. Like, he's very down to earth, serious, doesn't, like, no nonsense. And it's like, that's not Cam Clark. But for me, that, like, Cam Clark is always Kratos, because that was the first time I saw him.
For me, it's Liquid Snake. I feel like I have heard him in other roles, but Liquid Snake is the main one that I always remember. That and, now he doesn't voice Kazuhiro Miller, does he?
No, that is Robin Atkin Downs, I think is his name.
I believe so.
Rowan Atkin Downs?
Yeah.
But Cam Clark is in Smash Brothers, thankfully.
Yeah. Who does he play again? Wait, who does he play again?
He's Corrin.
He is Corrin. That's weird. That's super weird. But yeah, he, like, Liquid is so good because he's so, I hesitate to use this word, he's so extra. He's what the kids would call extra.
I don't hesitate
today.
To use that word.
With his like his accent is just out of control. They didn't change his accent in Twin Snakes, thank God.
Yeah, no, how could you?
I think the reason they didn't change his accent in Twin Snakes is because you hear him briefly in Metal Gear Solid 2. I bet you money that's the whole reason.
No, because you hear Mei Ling in Metal Gear Solid 2.
But you don't hear her with the accent, do you?
Yes, you do.
What the hell? I don't remember that at all. I haven't played Metal Gear Solid 2 since I played it for the first time.
She has one cameo appearance that is very obscure. Most people have never seen it. In the opening level of Metal Gear Solid 2, when you save, Otacon tries to like copy Mei Ling's thing, and like give you proverbs and stuff. And if you do it enough times, eventually Mei Ling will barge in and be like, Otacon, what the fuck are you doing?
You're bad at this. Fuck off. So Metal Gear Solid is a good game. It has some problems.
I'm sorry. I'm on Cam Clark's Behind the Voice Actors page, and you need to see this.
Oh god.
Put this in the show notes or something. This is important.
Holy shit. Fuck. Shit. That's really good. That's really, really good. Fuck. Anyways.
For the folks at home, go to Cam Clark's Behind the Voice Actors page and look at his entry for Metal Gear Solid 2.
It's very good. But yeah, Metal Gear Solid is a very good game, except for a couple of things. One that was more... You had more of an issue with because you were playing on like a normal difficulty. We think that it might have lowered the amount that I had to deal with them because I played on easy. Being the gun cameras.
They're bad.
They're actually, even on easy, they're kind of bad. And they seem worse than the original because they're basically just throw a chaff grenade or you die. Those are your two options.
Pretty much.
And so those suck, but also just the key card part is really bad. Like, it's really, really bad.
It also makes no sense. Like, yes, I understand it physically is something that would be possible, but why would you?
Well, like, cause the thing that I kept trying to point out is it is a card that you need to, for people that do not know, in Metal Gear Solid, you have a card. It is a PAL card that is supposed to be an emergency override for if the launch codes get put into Metal Gear Rex. And so Snake, believing that the detonation codes have been input into Metal Gear Rex and that Metal Gear Rex is active, puts it upon himself to figure out these key cards. And it turns out that the one he has, despite having looked for the other two the entire way through the base, is actually all three in one. And the way it works, it is what the game refers to as a shape memory alloy that changes shape depending on the temperature it is. So first you put in the room temperature key, and then you have to walk into the freezer where you fought Vulcan Raven to get the cold temperature key. and then you sit and you wait. For like a full 5 minutes.
It's not 5 minutes, but it's pretty long.
It feels like 5 minutes. And then you take it back and you put it in and you hurry because it can turn back into the room temperature key. Not very fast, granted, which leads me to think they knew this sucked. And then after you've done that, you have to go all the way to the blast furnace, which requires you to ride 2 separate cargo elevators to do the hot key, and then go back on those 2 separate cargo elevators.
This is exactly the kind of process that you want to run the emergency shutoff for a nuclear launch.
Yeah, it does. Like, it does. It sucks gameplay wise, and it makes no sense narratively.
But it's Kojima doing his bullshit.
Pretty much. Like, it's the first instance, I think, of Kojima really, really going deep into the bullshit. So yeah, that's. I think that is the weakest part of the game by far, 100%. Is that small little section. But otherwise, I mean, boss fights are overall fun, except for my stint with Vulcan Raven. I don't know. It's
Sniper Wolf's not great if you're out of Pentazamin.
This is true. That was a hell of a fight to watch.
Yeah, it's rough.
But I think that she is overall, like, she's really simple, but the atmosphere of fighting her is really good. And that's really all I have to say about the game itself, to be honest.
Yeah, it's the story takes so much precedence in the game that there's really not much worth discussing for the gameplay. Part of that is because it's one of the proto stealth games. Like, this game is the foundation of the stealth genre.
Pretty much.
And as a consequence, what is there to say? It's a stealth game. Everything that you know about a stealth game is Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, pretty much. This game wrote the book on how to make a 3D stealth game. 100%. Yeah. This is the Super Mario 64 of 3D stealth games.
Yeah. But the consequence about that is that what could we possibly say about like the most basic 3D stealth game?
Yeah, pretty much. Do you want to jump into the music real fast?
Sure.
Because I got some songs written down. I had never gone and listened to the original game's soundtrack.
I still have not listened to Twin Snakes. And at this point, I should probably address the elephant in the room of, hey, I said I was going to play both. And I was.
That was the plan.
Until my apartment's electricity was fucked for like a week and a half. And it got to the point where I needed to get this game done because I finished it an hour ago at time of recording.
You weren't able to start the game until a full week after I finished the game.
Yeah.
Like, so, it screwed up a lot of the schedule, but, like, I mean, shit happens. What were we going to do about it, to be fair?
Yeah, so something that I would like to do in the future is we can do a special bonus episode when we have the time where I play Twin Snakes and you play the original.
Which, I mean, I'm down with that. I don't know when that would be, but we'll figure it out. I think we've talked about a couple of possible times it could be, but... You know, we've got a few other bonus episode ideas in the works, and we'll figure those out.
Generally, our idea from here on out is I think it was a good idea for us to throw that little Banjo-Kazooie bonus episode in between, like, a bunch of Earthbound.
Yeah.
We didn't throw anything in the middle of Final Fantasy, but I think it would be fun if whenever we have a long stretch of a long game, we break it up a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that is a good plan, and that will probably be what we do. Just to break up the monotony of, you know, 5 parts of Earthbound, 6 parts of Final Fantasy. No, it would have been 4 parts of Earthbound, 5 parts of Final Fantasy. I have my numbers wrong. But yeah, I think that's going to be our plan from here on, so we'll see. But music. Yep.
But so for the music, I have not heard any of Twin Snakes' soundtrack except the stuff that you have specifically sent me.
Well, I do. But I do want to point out one thing. I want to use this as an example leading into all of this. So another piece of criticism that Twin Snakes gets, though I don't think this is as wide a criticism as usual, is that people prefer the original soundtrack to Twin Snakes. And after listening to both basically back to back, that checks out. Because, and I think the best example is, and I sent this to you earlier, here's what Blast Furnace sounds like in Metal Gear Solid. Here is what Blast Furnace sounds like in Twin Snakes. And that is generally how they go, for the most part. So Twin Snakes has a lot more quote-unquote variety, but only in that there are like four versions of every piece, but the trade-off seems to have been that they are less memorable. They're going more for atmospheric. The description I gave to you earlier was Metal Gear Solid 1 is a video game soundtrack. Metal Gear Solid The Twin Snakes is a film soundtrack.
I kind of want to dispute that because film soundtracks are better than that.
Well, I gave you like that's the worst example.
Like
I
a think. Lot like for the Blast Furnace specific, like it's just ambient noise. It's not really music. And even ambient music is more than that.
And there a lot of them are more than that. Like a lot of the songs are more than that, but I think that is the most striking example of like, yeah, they went a lot more like low key with the soundtrack of Twin Snakes. It should be said that this was apparently like the whole composition thing for Twin Snakes was split between the guy from Silicon Knights, who his name is escaping me right now, I apologize, and Norihiko Hibino, who is a guy who has been working on the Metal Gear series since the original Metal Gear Solid.
And so for the original Metal Gear Solid, I think there is probably the single most iconic music theme in the entire franchise, which would be the Encounter theme.
Yeah, and in the original game, from what I can tell, you hear this song a lot, varying different versions of it. It's like half the soundtrack, as far as I could tell. Which, I mean, there are worse songs to make half your soundtrack. This is a good song. It was basically the song that introduced him in Smash.
So you are actually incorrect. You do not hear different versions of Encounter throughout the whole soundtrack. You just hear Encounter over and over. Like literally the same piece of the same audio file.
No, there's a couple different versions of it that play every once in a while. Like the Hind D fight has a different version of Encounter, but it's still Encounter. The Sniper Wolf fight has a slightly different version of Encounter, but it's still Encounter.
I don't know if I agree with that. It's the same musical style, but it's not the same song.
It's basically the same song.
The Sniper Wolf fight doesn't have a different version of Encounter. It just has Encounter.
I mean, either way, like, you hear Encounter and you hear the different varying parts of Encounter a lot. They are a good chunk of the soundtrack.
Now, a song that actually has some variation throughout the soundtrack is Intruder, which has three different versions.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back.
I assume these are the songs that play when you're like hiding from stuff.
These are the basic background music.
Okay.
When you're just going around.
Interesting.
And some specific areas have their own specific tracks. But Intruder 1, 2, and 3 are the generic ones that play everywhere else.
And so this game has a very small soundtrack, the original game does, which is probably a direct result of all of the voice acting. Because, like,
there's a lot of it.
The PS1 can handle a lot of music. We talked about Final Fantasy VII. That game has so much music in it. So, like, this game, it's two discs. Why doesn't it have as much music? Because voice acting lines are still sound files.
Yes, and there is, let's be honest, probably a solid 2 or 3 hours of just voice acting.
Yeah, most likely.
And let me actually look at this. So the Final Fantasy VII soundtrack on Spotify is 4.5 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So you get two, 3 hours of voice acting. Oh no, you only got about 1.5 hours left for music.
Yeah, it's that's probably the direct reason. I can't say that for sure, but it seems pretty obvious to me that that's why this game does not have a robust, massive soundtrack.
Yeah.
Another.
And also, it's a much shorter game than Final Fantasy VII.
A song that I feel like should be highlighted, if only for the fact that it's the only song from this game that just got directly lifted and thrown in Smash, is Cavern. This song is in Smash, untouched. It doesn't fit in Smash at all. But it is
also quintessentially Metal Gear.
It is, I agree. It's just weird that it's in Smash. I don't know, it's bizarre. It's one of two MGS1 songs in... There's one song from every Metal Gear game that have been released up to that point in Brawl.
Mm-hmm.
And that is no longer the case in Ultimate because we didn't get anything from 5.
Even though we did get new music. Well, I can't even think of music from 5.
Sins of the Father. Should have gotten Sins of the Father. Even if it was just instrumental. But we didn't.
I'm gonna level with you. Off the top of my head, I can't pull that song out because Metal Gear Solid 5.
Sins of the Father is... fantastic. It is the best thing to come out of that game by far, 100%. It's a fantastic song. You're nuts.
We got a new Snake Eater, though.
We did get a new Snake Eater, which I like better than it just being a plain fucking instrumental version of a regular Snake Eater. I also like Mantis Hymn. It's just a creepy song.
So is this the same in Twin Snakes, or did they make a new Mantis Hymn?
It's a lot more subtle in Twin Snakes. You hear it both times that Mantis is involved, but from what I could tell from listening to the soundtrack, it's a lot quieter. But it is still in Twin Snakes. This piece is still pretty much compositionally untouched in Twin Snakes. And it's a very good, creepy song that, you know, for the creepiest boss in the game. And the only other one that I can think to really shout out from the first game is Enclosure.
Thank you.
I believe this is the song that plays when Wolf is dying?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So that I'm right there. Yeah, like I said, that's my favorite scene in the game, and this music, like, really makes it. It's super great.
I'm trying to find the song that plays... I mean, it might be Enclosure. I'm trying to find the song that plays when Snake is... when Snake is lying to Naomi about Grey Fox's last words.
I think I know what it is, and we will get to that in a bit.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. I do want to highlight three songs from Twin Snakes. Because while that soundtrack is overall not as good, I do think it has three standouts, which are three of the boss themes. Because in Twin Snakes, all the bosses have their own music instead of just being Encounter.
Cool.
So there's Soldier versus Ghost. This is the Grey Fox battle theme. They give it some cool drums, some rad, like, sort of flutes to make it sound all, like, ninja-y.
Well, hey now. Grey Fox does have his own boss fight theme in the original. It's called Duel, and it's a remix of Encounter.
Sure is, but this is an original song, and it's very, very good. You also have Assassin versus Saladin.
Saladin's what they call Big Boss.
Yeah, because this is the Saladin is what Wolf calls Big Boss. Because this is the boss fight music for Wolf. And I think it's very, very good. It's very tense. It's very fast. It's very cool. Even though it is a...
I'm wondering if that's the right tone for a sniper battle.
Yeah, that's my...
A sniper battle is a more deliberate thing.
That's my only real issue with it. But also, Encounter plays in the original game. So,
well, Encounter isn't as fast-paced as this.
I think Wolf gets away with it because it's not a slow-paced sniper fight. It is.
I suppose.
It is a... Both of you are constantly firing at each other all the time. It's not really a hide and hunt sort of thing. Because you can't really hide from her. You can just sort of get behind a tree and make sure she can't shoot you.
Yeah.
But she knows where you are. And lastly, I really, really like Snake versus Shaman. Boss fight theme for Vulcan Raven. While that fight might suck, the music is pretty good. It's got like some Inuit / Native American sort of like vocals going on.
We assume.
I don't know for sure. I really can't tell you for sure. I'm hoping that it's Inuit because that would fit Raven. It's a very cool song. But
they are good songs.
But of course, the most important song that we have to talk about, and I think this might be the song that plays during the scene you're thinking of, but I can't remember, even though I also just watched it an hour ago, is The Best Is Yet to Come.
Yeah.
this is my favorite credits song in the series. Can't Say Goodbye to Yesterday is a very close second. But this song is gorgeous. It is fantastic. It's beautiful. I love it.
This is an excellent song. Yeah.
And it's in Gaelic, too, which is weird. A weird choice, but hey, it sounds
great. How many vocal songs have we had so far?
I want to say... that is a good question. I don't know. I want to say we've only had one, being One Winged Angel. I think that's it.
And even then, that was a choir vocal.
Yeah, that wasn't like a solo vocalist.
Yeah, this is the first quote-unquote insert song, as they would be called in anime parlance.
Yeah, I do believe that this is the first one that we've encountered in our games, because before this, there's one sound bite in Earthbound, and then there's the choral stuff in One Winged Angel, and as far as I can remember, there's nothing else after that. There's nothing else before that, or between that. So yeah.
Yeah.
And it's in Gaelic, of all languages, which makes it sound super unique even today. So how many songs, how many songs can you name that are in Gaelic?
Someone's going to sarcastically chime in and say we that Smiles and Tears was technically vocal. And it's like, okay, guy.
No, that's why I mentioned it specifically. There's a sound bite that doesn't make it vocal.
Yeah. But yeah, this Best Is Yet to Come is very, very good. And it also fits with the themes of the story.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that, looking over this list, this might be my favorite credits song on the list. this song is fantastic. It's so good. It's very emotional. The vocalist kills it. It's great.
Is it the same vocalist in Twin Snakes?
It's the same song. It's Untouched. As I am aware. As far as I could tell, it is completely Untouched. Because there was no real reason to re-record it, I assume. I don't know. But it sounds like the same vocalist, even if it was redone, and I just can't tell. Great song. Great, great, great song, and that is all I got.
Yeah, it's a great game. I think I could do without the gun cameras. It'd be a lot better without them.
Pretty much. But what this mostly leaves me away from is I want to replay 2 and 3.
Yeah, I agree. I do as well.
Maybe those are other bonus episode territories for much, much later. But also, I might just replay them on my own. Because I haven't replayed Metal Gear Solid 2 since I played it the first time. But 3 I've replayed like 4 or 5 times at this point.
As of this very moment, I have replayed every Metal Gear Solid game that I have played at all. And I still have not played 4.
I would recommend giving 4 a shot. Just as long as you go in realizing that it is a fucking mess. It is a mess, and it is at least a fun mess. But it is a mess. And then you can go watch Super Bunny Hop's really good,
I've already watched that video.
Oh, that video is so good. He looks so tired.
Fox died, John Nye.
I gotta go rewatch all of those. But yeah, that's Metal Gear Solid. I think we should probably move on, because this episode is already, seeming like it might be one of our longest episodes yet.
It sure is. And we have to talk about the elephant in the room of... The first character of Fighters Pass Volume 2.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We never announced that. We don't know who the character is yet, but they've already...
But there's only one game it can possibly be.
Yeah, they've already told us what game they're from, so we will be playing ARMS for whoever the hell DLC Fighter number 6 is. My bet is still on Ribbon Girl. I still think she's... basically a sure thing, but I could see it being somebody else.
Either Ribbon Girl or Min Min.
I could see. For me. I think those two are the highest chances.
I think Twintel would be a great pick, but it won't be Twintel.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be Twintel. I think Helix would be too top tier, and that's why he's not going to be in the game.
Helix would be incredible.
But yeah, so we're getting a character from ARMS, which means that we will be playing the 2017 Nintendo Switch game, ARMS. It'll work just like all the other fighting games. We're just going to do exhibition matches, and we'll, you know.
And ARMS happens to have the best fighting game casual lobby that I've ever seen in my life.
It also has online play, which leads into that, which will be the first time that's been an official fucking thing on.
By then we'll have Street Fighter V.
That's true. We will have played Street Fighter V. I do want to say this on air. Personally, I think that if Street Fighter VI gets announced before we get to Street Fighter V, we should change it to Street Fighter IV. Because the only reason that I want to play Street Fighter V is because it would be a cool then and now thing between it and Street Fighter II, even though everybody and their mother, upon seeing that 5 is the game on the list, has said, you guys should really actually play 4, because 4 is considered a good game, and
I have 4 on 3DS.
I also have 4 on 3DS. That would not be the version I played. Oh, no, I don't have 4. Absolutely not. Oh, I do have 4 on 3DS. I bought a physical copy when the game first came out.
Same. I did too. I don't know why I did.
But then I sold that physical copy, but then it was in a Humble Bundle. So I own a digital copy.
I still have it, and I don't know why.
But yeah, so that... ARMS. We're going to play ARMS. We're going to play ARMS when the time comes in like 70 years. We're through 25 games.
Oh boy.
We have a total of, by my count, 60 games left. We're a full fourth of the way through this list. That's weird.
We're almost a third of the way through.
Honestly, yeah. That's weird. That's weird to think about.
I don't know what I'm going to do with myself when we're done. Just, like, start over, I guess.
Yeah, we'll have to go replay Duck Hunt. Anyways, we should probably move on to our next game. And that game is representing fighter number 16, Sheik. It is the 1998 Nintendo 64 game, The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time. And we are not alone for this episode. We once again have a guest. Joining us is the designer of the Smashterpieces logo and a longtime friend of Matt and I. Please welcome Soul.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. You don't do podcasts like ever.
No, I don't.
So this is a new experience for you, but we dragged you in kicking and screaming. And can you tell the folks why?
Because this is both the first game I ever beat and my favorite game of all time.
So we figured there's no better person to pick to be the guest for the Ocarina of Time episode than you. So welcome aboard.
I am happy to be here.
So a thing we usually do, which I purposefully made a point not to tell you, was whenever we have a guest, we ask them about the game we just played. Soul, how do you feel about Metal Gear Solid?
I can't tell you a damn thing about that game.
No, make something up. How do you feel about Metal Gear Solid?
You could make something up and possibly be completely right.
You know, it was a great game for its time, and I give it a 7 out of 12.
What do you think of the differences between Metal Gear Solid and Metal Gear Solid, the Twin Snakes?
I mean, the Twin Snakes is two snakes, so it's better, right?
Yes! I win. My win, baby.
How do you feel about Meryl?
He seems okay.
Anyways. So Ocarina of Time, it's your favorite game of all time. It is famously the game that got you... that made you a quote-unquote gamer.
A real gamer.
A real gamer.
Yep.
But you played 3D.
Yeah.
The first time.
Yeah, I played it on 3DS because I didn't actually get into video games until, I think it was like 2013 when I got it. So, I had, you know, better graphics and gameplay experience.
It is mostly the same game on 3DS. It's got, obviously, the better graphics, and it allows you to do motion controls for aiming, which I like. I think that's a good addition. But otherwise, it's pretty much exactly the same game.
I think I've just been spoiled, though, because anytime I've tried to play, like, the N64 version on an emulator, it's never gone well for me.
It's a matter, I think it's a matter of, it's very difficult to adjust to the frame rate, and I know frame rates is something that you personally have never really registered as something you can recognize, but going from a game that is like a full, is it 60 frames per second? I can't remember, but it's definitely, it's much higher because the original N64 version is at 20 frames per second, and that can be a very jarring difference. That might be the main thing that trips you up with it, I think, because it's one of those things that you can't really put your finger on what is going on, but it just feels worse somehow. And when you can't really identify what it is, then it psychologically feels even worse because you just get the impression, oh, this is bad.
Yeah, and I think also the motion controls are a big thing because whenever I've played it on an emulator and I've had to use like the bow and arrow, it's been very difficult for me.
So I have a question for both of you. How many times have you two beaten The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time?
Oh, are we talking just regular playthroughs, or...?
Let's go with just in general. In any fashion.
So any time that I have defeated Ganon and watched credits?
I mean, that's technically beating Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Enough that I have lost count, because I do a lot of those randomizers there.
What about you, Sol?
I'm not going to count randomizers because I've beaten a couple of them, but I don't really know how many. So just like regular playthroughs of the game, I'd say 7.
Ask me how many times I've beaten Ocarina of Time.
I've read ahead. I know this.
How many times have you beaten Ocarina of Time?
Once.
Nice.
I played the original N64 version.
Oh boy.
It might have been 2011, which is the second time that has been mentioned, which is the same year that I went through and beat a bunch of Metal Gear games, funnily enough.
Wait, so you've never even played the 3DS version?
I've never played the 3DS version.
Huh.
Wow.
Weirdly enough, I bought the 3DS version specifically for when we play it on this show, which leads me to the unfortunate thing is that I will not be streaming. Sol will not be streaming, but for different reasons, because Sol doesn't stream.
And also for the same reason that you're not streaming.
Also for the same reason that I'm not streaming. She is also playing the 3DS version. Correct? You're not gonna make this your chance to finally give the 64 version another shot?
Hell no. I beat the game the first time, I played it at least once a year every year afterwards, except for the last couple of years. But yeah, it's been a few years since I've played it, so I don't remember quite as many things, so I'm just gonna stick with it. But this will be the first time in a while I'm gonna be playing the normal version, because in subsequent playthroughs I always played Master Quest.
So basically what I'm trying to say is, Matt will be the only one streaming. He'll be on Nintendo World Report, twitch.tv/Nintendo World Report, which is probably overall a good thing, because I have a feeling, and tell me if I'm wrong, that you two are probably going to breeze through this game way faster than I will.
I was so looking forward to seeing you stumble through it on stream.
Yeah, and I know that that might be kind of disappointing for some people. Don't worry, I'm still gonna play the 64 version of Majora's Mask, because Majora's Mask 3D is not very good.
I mean, it's not bad, it's just the worst version.
Yeah, it's not as good.
It's still Majora's Mask. It's still one of the best video games ever made, but the original is better.
So, don't worry, you'll still get to see me play an IE64 Zelda, but Ocarina of Time will not be that one. Apologies. But this will also give me a chance to, like, just sort of sit in bed and play and not exhaust myself in a 3-hour stream. Which I think, in the end, is gonna be a bit of an advantage. I need that handicap. You two are going to probably have beaten this game before I've made it to, like, the 2/3 mark.
That better not be true, considering I'm only playing it for 4 hours at a time once a week.
That's fair.
Like, if I beat this game first, then something's gone wrong.
In other words, the bets should be that Sol is going to beat it first, and then you are going to beat it, and then I'm
Oh my god.
I don't have a lot of faith in myself moving through this game quickly.
Oh my god.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to giving this game another shot. I remember when I played it the first time, it kind of gave this feeling of like, it's kind of overrated. I think I was just being a contrarian.
I remember the three of us being in a car together, and we were like screaming at you because you thought Ocarina of Time was overrated and aged poorly.
I think I was just being contrarian at the time. Probably. Because I can't imagine.
You should have grown out of that by then.
I can't imagine any other reason why I would be like, yeah, Ocarina of Time's overrated. But Majora's Mask, though. Favorite Zelda game.
I mean, fair. It is better.
It is better. But. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to giving this game another shot. I haven't played it in almost a decade. And then I'm also looking forward to hearing from you two, who know a lot more about Ocarina of Time than I do, and will be better at Ocarina of Time than I will.
I think my stream is going to be a little weird, because obviously by necessity, I'm the one that's streaming it on Nintendo World Report, because I'm the only one that can stream it. But I also know the game inside and out. So, I'm just going to like tear through it. You're not going to see a regular playthrough of Ocarina of Time. You're going to see me walking backwards because it's faster. You're going to see me doing exploits because I know how to do exploits. It's going to be weird. I recommend it.
I for one, am kind of looking forward to that.
See, I'm looking forward to when we play the game and do the podcast, because you've got Matt, who is pretty much an expert in Ocarina of Time because of randomizers and dabbling into speedrunning and all of that. And then you have Joe, who has played it once, and I look forward to hearing about all the parts you struggle with. And then I just feel like I'm kind of in the middle, where I'm like, yeah, I've played it a lot, but
you're
don't...
a regular human being who is familiar with a video game.
You're a regular. We are two ends of the spectrum, and you are smack dab in the center of that spectrum.
Yeah, that is true. Like, I've played it multiple times, but I don't feel like I have quite as much knowledge base or like know my way around right away. So, yeah,
it's gonna be a very fun time, I think. I'm looking forward to this episode. Anyways,
this is our last regular game before we hit our first special episode.
Actually, yeah, this is the last game we're playing that came out before Super Smash Bros. Was a thing.
Yep.
That's true. That's cool.
What's your special episode? Is that a secret?
It's been on our list forever.
It'll
the
be
next
an episode
game
about
after
Super Smash
Ocarina
Brothers.
Of Time is Super Smash Brothers.
Like we're gonna do like a bonus episode about Super Smash Brothers. It's gonna be, well, not that bonus. It'll
it's
technically
a
be a bonus
episode.
Special, yeah. We'll figure it out. It's fine.
No, it's
yeah.
We've literally written it down for the past almost 3 years. It's a special episode.
But yeah. We have almost entered a world in which Super Smash Bros. Exists.
And
holy
we still
shit.
Haven't played a Pokemon game.
Yeah, this is also true. Which, that'll change after that. We've at least hit a world where Pokemon exists.
Yes.
Which we only recently did that, to be fair.
Is Pokemon the only franchise that was in the original that we haven't touched at all?
F-Zero.
That's true.
Yeah, we haven't touched an F-Zero game yet. That's literally it, though. Other than that, yes, we have played one game from every franchise in the original outside of Pokemon and F-Zero.
Sick.
So yeah, we should wrap up because this is already probably going to be among our longest episodes. This might narrowly be beat out by Mario 64. There's no way to know until it's been like final rendered.
Oops.
But with that. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube at Smasherpieces. All three of those, you can find us there. You can find me on Twitter at TheDeBaga. You can find Matt on Twitter at GrimaceDoMenace. So do you want us to give them your Twitter?
You can't find me.
Okay, never mind.
Leave that in.
Okay, she doesn't have a Twitter. She's not real. You can find Matt's Ocarina of Time streams over at twitch.tv/NintendoWorldReport. They will be every Thursday at what you describe as after work time, because it's not really at a solid time every week, because
the times we live in right now don't lend themselves very well to schedules.
Yeah, not really. They're kind of a pretty much. And that's really all. You can follow our editor, Peter Spezia, at Pete Speakeasy. You should go follow him and tell him that he does a cool job, because without him, these episodes would take twice as long to come out and probably be half as good. So that's something that you should definitely do. Go follow him and say hi.
Check out his show with Joe, Original Sound Chat.
Yeah.
It's about video game music.
It is about video game music, and it's if I might say so, pretty good. And with that, my name is Joe.
And my name is Matt.
Oh, yes. I say goodbye?
Yeah, you gotta sign off too. You're part of the show.
And I'm Sol.
And we will see you next time for our discussion on The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time. Here's what Blast Furnace sounds like in Metal Gear Solid.
Dun 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 dun. Dun 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 dun.
Here is what Blast Furnace sounds like in Twin Snakes.
Do, 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 do.
And that is generally how they go, for the most part. So Twin Snakes has a lot more...